The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
The Boston Red Sox complete the sweep, taking out the Nationals in Game 3 of their series on the road, 6-4. That's good enough to raise their record above 500 once more, and they now stand at 46 wins and 45 losses. I'm Nick the Voice, joined today by Terry Cushman Jr., and we are the Bastards of Boston. If you want more, you can go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles posted just about every day. Now, this was an interesting one. We started off really banging up the Nationals pitcher. Another early sort of rally, which unfortunately the runs became very sparse. We didn't have a huge offensive day. In the 7th and the 9th, we got one more run apiece, but predominantly we won this one early. And thank God for it, too, because Crochet, even though he only gave up 2 runs, didn't look super sharp. Let's start with that. What was your take on Crochet?
Yeah, it's interesting because he wasn't really giving up a ton of hard contact, but they did put together 9 hits. I think just 2 runs over. Did he only go 5 innings?
Yep, that's right.
I forgot to pull the box up. Yeah. Yeah, he had 84 pitches coming into the 5th, so it wasn't the most efficient day. Two or three walks mixed in there, and he didn't look particularly good against the Reds either. So he had that huge lead. That might have been the game where the young rookie was tipping. Was that the game? Yep. Yeah. So he really we buried them before he even took the mound. I think he had like a 5-0 lead or something like that.
It was something like that. It might have even been 7. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, right. And anyway, so this would have been a good bounce back start, you know, suggesting that perhaps his start against the Rays was a bit of a blip, but labored a little bit. If it was a more dynamic offense, it could have been a different result, but he'll have one more start against the Tampa Bay Rays in the second game of that series. And then the All-Star break. Presumably, I'm guessing he'll pitch an inning in that game.
Yeah, probably. You know, it's one of those things where I was not expecting this offense, the Washington offense, to really be able to challenge Crochet. And I was impressed by what I saw from them today. This is a very top-heavy offense, and funnily enough, our pitching staff did a very, very good job of suppressing Woods, who has been an absolute stud. I think he only had 1 hit this series. I might be off on that, but it was a very quiet series for him. And then without him, though, the rest of the offense put together a pretty valiant effort today. It looks like we got bailed out a little bit. I mean, certainly you see 9 hits, 2 walks in 5 innings. You expect more than 2 runs to come off of that. But you're right, it was very much a sort of death by a thousand cuts that the Nats were trying to deal to us. A lot of soft contact, just finding the holes between defenders. very frustrating to watch and very thankful that it didn't end up costing us in the long run. What did almost cost us, though, was Weissert coming out. That's one thing I'd like to talk about. Is again, you know, we went to Whitlock in the sixth. He did well. We went to Wilson, who couldn't quite get the full inning of work, and so we sent out Weissert. And Weissert's control was all over the place. And this is just more of the same with him, where he's getting worse and worse and worse as the season goes. And it simply comes down to usage. I mean, we literally are pitching him every other day. 15 games in June, and now three already on July 6th in July. It's just not sustainable. And I don't know why Cora insists on just putting this guy out there every day almost.
Yeah. And there's a lot of problems with the way he's being utilized. You know, number one, obviously the usage, but you know, eventually the book's going to be out on him. And it just seems like teams have stopped chasing against him and they're forcing him to throw strikes and he's just not throwing enough of them. And, you know, that's led to the walks. And I think that's how the run came in today on ball four with the bases loaded. And then he was able to get a pop up to end the inning. But, you know, just a ball through the gap there would have plated two runs with two outs. And it seemed like today also, and with Crochet on the mound, they'd get to two outs, and that's when the Nationals would get scrappy. They just couldn't put the inning away. And, you know, but eventually they did. But most of the traffic on the bases was with two outs.
Yeah, it's just more of the same with the Bernardino thing. It's worrisome to see a guy being used that much. I would like to see the arms diversified a little bit. Weissert is not the fireman. He can't come out every single time and put it out. He was able to do that for a couple months at the start of the year. But you ask a guy to do that too often, the arm is going to fall off. The accuracy is going to take a dip, and that's exactly what we've been seeing. Now, fortunately, that didn't cost us. Chapman looked great. Hicks has a nice arsenal. He still needs to sharpen up a few things. He looked great that first appearance for us, pretty bad his second, and so far this one was kind of a mixed bag, but ultimately, even though he gave up a run, he had a nice cushion, you know, so it wasn't that big of a deal.
If things went sideways in the ninth with Hicks, and I'm not blaming Cora for, you know, sequencing it out that way, Chapman, there were so many lefties in the eighth inning, it made sense. But the tweet would have been, and perhaps the title of this show would have been, Giants win the Devers trade if the inning went sideways. And I don't know what Hicks is going to be, but, you know, we definitely need arms in the pen. As we're saying, Weissert looks pretty well cooked, and we know Bernie is. So you could definitely use a Jordan Hicks, and I wasn't overly pessimistic by what I saw today.
Yeah, definitely. Meanwhile, on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, Story continues to rake. Zidane Raffaella is just unbelievable. I mean, how much longer can we have this guy batting ninth? Honestly.
It's one of those things you just don't want to mess with it, but you can see the confidence just rising in the kid in all kinds of different situations. And he's helping you win so many different ways on the base pass with his elite defense and now with the bat. And I mean, in a perfect world, if this is who Raffaella is, and I think we're getting there, he's probably a two-hole hitter in most lineups, I would say.
I agree. I mean, I guess when it comes to the whole share of plate appearances and whatnot, batting sixth and batting ninth, there isn't a huge difference. But, I mean, the guy's been so good with runners in scoring position. He's really been working on his power. He's walking a little bit more. The on-base isn't that bad. He's just fun to watch. And like you said, he's very multifaceted. I can sort of feel the vibe shift almost on him, where he was sort of signed to that extension early. Everyone was like, okay, he's going to be sort of, you know, we're locking down this super utility player that can give us plus defense all over the place. And now suddenly he's sort of becoming a fan favorite, and it's very deserved, I feel.
Yeah, you know, and with the extension, I was like, even when it happened, I'm like, well, I mean, I guess, you know, you know, it didn't, he wasn't our top prospect at that point. And, you know, Marcelo Meyer was, and I don't, Anthony wasn't quite at the top of our farm system yet, but, you know, it wasn't long after he kind of emerged. And I think that was the season where Christian Campbell broke out, but I just didn't really see the urgency in doing it. But suddenly, I mean, he's really come on. I mean, just in the last month, he's hitting 306 with, I thought I had it up right here. Yeah, 306 with a 342 on base. Only five walks in that span, but you know, I maybe he's just never going to be that guy. But in the last week, though, and he was a huge part of this sweep. He's hitting 370 with a 393 on base. Stole a couple of bags too. So it's just, it's good to see. He's a dynamic player. Jason Kelly tweeted out, you know, he should be on the All-Star team.
He really should be. From what I've seen in terms of, like, I think it was sorting by F4. I believe he's like a top five center fielder in the game right now. You know, you have Pete Crow, you have all those guys up at the very top, and then Sedan Rafaela kind of chasing quite a bit of the pack.
And the Mass Live guys pointed out he was leading the Red Sox in WAR, and I think it was only 2.5, and that was at some point last week. It's since risen to 3.2, wow, according to Baseball Reference. So that's just how big of a week he's having, and I don't know what the ceiling is for him, but he's going to be compared to Jackie Bradley. And I think when all is said and done, I just think he's going to have the better career. I mean, you look at Bradley, you had that elite defense, an epic 2018 ALCS. He was the MVP for that series. And then a couple years before that, he had a 28 or 29 game hitting streak. So, I mean, that's Jackie Bradley. That sums up the majority of his career. And now you have Rafaela, who the only thing Bradley really has an edge on Rafaela defensively is Bradley had a cannon of an arm, and Rafaela doesn't have like Johnny Damon syndrome by any means. He's not going to have an outfielder cut him off halfway through the outfield like Manny did in that infamous play. But yeah, I mean, he's got so much range and has had a lot of highlight reel plays. So he's definitely been a bright spot for the Red Sox this season.
Definitely. You know, what's really interesting with him, I mean, the approach is what it is at this point. He doesn't like to walk. He likes to swing the bat. And so far, it's producing. I mean, so far as slugging goes, he's been good for a while. You know, you go back to April, 682 OPS, good on base, decent on base, I should say. The power started to come alive more so in May. He slugged 400 that month, 698 OPS. Then last month, slashed 283, 327, 543 for an 870. And he's starting out this month, five games, ridiculous. I mean, it's fun to see. He might not be an anchor. I can sort of see him being prone to slumps, maybe. But for right now, you play him while he's hot. And I think we're seeing, like you said, a confidence in him where he just seems to be sharpening up in a lot of ways.
I mean, I hope it continues. If we're going to make that run towards October, and I'm still not a believer. I mean, it's nice. I mean, you were two games under at the start of this national series, and it seems like when you need a big series against the Nationals, you end up getting it. 'Cause you go back to 2021, that was the final series of the year in which we had to win. We had to sweep them to get in. And the series before that was against Baltimore, and they took 2 out of 3 against us. So to sweep any team just seemed like a tough sell, and we got it done. And we've got 3 against the Rockies coming up, and we'll see. I don't know. I'm not going to say we're definitely going to sweep them. I'm supremely confident we'll take at least 2 out of 3. But we're catching those two teams at the right time, and I don't know. I mean, you got 4 against Tampa, and I think under any scenario, you'd almost be happy with a split in that series. Just coming off of these two, I think that keeps your head above water. And the Red Sox front office will have 3 days to really assess the market and do a deep dive and figure out, you know, who are we going to target? What do we need? Who can we part with? And because you've got a tough stretch coming up. I don't know who you have right away. It might be the Yankees. Then you've got the Phillies right after that.
Yeah, it's Cubs, Phillies, and Dodgers.
Oh, okay. So the Yankees are even further back. So that's one hell of a gauntlet. Arguably the 3 best teams in the National League. You're going to face them.
Yeah, that's going to be ugly. I mean, ultimately, you're right. I think that what this team needs to do, go out there, sweep the Rockies, split against the Rays, and just give yourselves some days off. Maybe they can talk with Crochet, say, hey, you know, maybe give your arm a rest. You know, don't bother pitching the inning. I know a lot of guys have done that in the past. I'm pretty sure back in 2018, Craig Kimbrell actually elected to stay off, you know, the field. He went there, but he decided not to pitch. So I know guys can elect to do that. Hopefully this break can just give the arms a rest, because guys like Weissert, guys like Bernardino, they're going to be in slings by the end of this month if things keep up the way it has been.
And the other interesting observation with the All-Star game is Tanner Houck pitched that game last year and was having the best season of his career. That ended up being the turning point where he wasn't the same in the second half, and still really hasn't been the same guy.
Absolutely. You know, there's another guy I want to give some kudos to, but real fast, just the last thing I want to say on Rafael, I just pulled up a page here just to check his numbers, and somehow they're even better than I expected, where in terms of outs above average right now, his range is ranked in the 100th percentile. He is currently considered to be the best, or tied for the best, fielder in baseball. Just absolutely amazing. And the interesting thing about his approach, he chases so, so much. And yet he actually strikes out less than average, only a 19.7% strikeout rate. And I think that that is what's going to help his style produce more consistently, is just putting the ball in play. Another guy who likes to, you know, swing at pitches is Toro, who continues to hit 2 hits today and an intentional walk, which I found was very, very funny. It made sense in the moment, you know, a man on second, 2 outs. But I mean, that just goes to show the respect that the league is having for him, you know, being able to point to first and put up 4 fingers and say, you know what, man, take your base.
I kind of chuckled when it happened. I mean, he was 2 for 3 going into that at bat, and who was after him? It ended up being a pinch hitter, I think.
Oh yeah, it was Connor Wong.
Did they bring Abreu in?
In the slot?
Oh, my bad. All right, and he grounded into a double play. I don't know if that was the same inning. It must have been, actually. There were runners on first and second, but yeah, people were in my DMs today just raging about that, and I made a couple observations. One of them we did cover with Crochet. The other one, Duran had just a blunder of a defensive play, and perhaps the game wouldn't have been that close had he made that play. But he's doing this thing where he's not tracking the ball well, and he's kind of undercutting it and just trying to leap up and snag it. And a lot of those types of hits are like line drive type things. They're not even fly balls. And it's just a kind of a awkward, unorthodox looking play. And he's gotten away with it for the most part, but he didn't today. And the ball rolled back another 50 or 60 feet to the wall. And it was just really costly. So I don't know what the difference is, you know, in his mindset, because he was elite last year. He was truly an elite outfielder. I don't know where he really ranked, but his defensive WAR was like 2.5 or something after being negative for just about every season. So now he seems to have regressed. And I mean, I think it's fixable, but and perhaps today will finally be that turning point. But yeah, so I posted those two things, and then the Wong double play happened, and he still hasn't. He's 0 for whatever with runners in scoring position, 0 for 26, yeah. I think. So just an ugly season. And, you know, we were bashing him pretty good in May and in early June, but you had to believe it's going to turn at some point. I mean, he's been a very good offensive, you know, producer, and just, I don't know what happened.
Yeah, you know, his last year, we knew that. I'm just looking at his slash line. Last year, he hit 280, 333, 425. His OPS plus was 112. Like you said, good hitter. You know, you like to see it. And they said the defense was going to take a step forward this year. Maybe it has. I don't know. But offensively, I mean, he's just a black hole in the lineup, the true definition. I feel bad for the guy. We knew some regression was probably going to happen, but I was expecting maybe regression would be like an OPS plus of 90, 85, maybe worst case scenario. I wasn't expecting 17, which is about where it's at right now.
Yeah. And I mean, Kyle Teal gets traded. Like, that's like the ultimate gift from the gods. If you're Connor Wong, Devers spent the whole winter dreading Arenado or Bregman coming, and his worst fear was realized. Connor Wong's worst fear was kind of lifted off his shoulders. You know, Teal gets traded to Chicago. I don't think anybody was really worried about Narvaez at that point. And I don't know. It's just maybe he thrived on the pressure of Teal eventually coming up and was just hell bent on making his case that he should be the catcher. And you know, I don't know. I'm just trying to get into his head a little bit, but it's been an ugly season, and I don't think you can even really. He has no trade value right now. He'd be the last piece in a trade package if he was in fact moved.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's just no reason to even do it. I mean, for me, you'd almost pay someone to keep Connor Wong on their team. He's worth negative WAR right now. He hurts their chances to win. You know, the thing with Teal is that right now, only in 19 games, he has a B-WAR of 0.8, which is very, very good for only 57 at-bats. Of course, that can go down if he hits a slump. But, you know, Connor Wong has a B-WAR of negative 0.3 right now. So, I mean, that really says everything you need to know. I mean, it's happened in the past. You have bad hitters who have good seasons. Even Sandy Leon had it. You know, so I'm sort of ready to write Connor Wong off as a fluke and say, thank God for Narvaez. Hopefully Narvaez is real and at least the defense is elite. And, you know, he's got some pop in his bat.
I was a big Sandy Leon apologist. Everybody has that mediocre player they irrationally like. And for me, it was him. And it wasn't even the bat. It was just the game calling ability.
That was the reason to keep him around. Absolutely.
Yeah. If he doesn't take over at catcher, I think, I can't remember how that went. Let's see, that was 2016. I think Vasquez had come back from Tommy John, but just wasn't getting it done offensively or something. And I don't know. Sandy Leon just seemed to win over John Farrell and Rick Porcello, and the rest was history. But yeah, so just in our stream chat here, is Yoshida being activated tomorrow?
I heard for this homestand.
Okay. That's interesting. And we could also get Bregman back. So that's going to be a couple of roster moves. I know you tweeted out you've been pleasantly surprised at Nate Eaton, but you got to believe he's probably going to be headed back.
For me right now, from what I've seen from Nate Eaton, I view him as an upgrade over what I've seen from David Hamilton. I would rather Hamilton go before Eaton.
I haven't really dove into Eaton's versatility, but can he play middle infield?
I believe so. And I believe he played center field yesterday, right? At one point? Yeah.
Oh, did he? Okay. Yesterday was my Uber night, so I was listening on the radio. But, okay. Well, I guess that makes sense. Not that we really have a ton of...
I know. Need for that, for sure. In the outfield, but.
Yeah. And then, so with Massa coming up, who would get sent down in that case?
So that's pretty much the problem. This I was putting some thought into this before. I think that when Yoshida comes back, I would prefer to send down Hamilton, keep Eaton on the roster. When Bregman comes back, in theory, Nate Eaton would be the next to go. But then the problem with that becomes, what does our bench look like? We're actually lacking an infielder. We just have too many outfielders, like we've been saying.
Yeah, because, I mean, you would think that the Toro-Romy platoon over at first is relatively safe, but you know what? I mean, it just, I can't see a scenario with Hamilton staying either way because Meyer's going to play second in all likelihood. So... Well,
yeah, so
but he might not want him to face lefties, but at the same time, you don't really want Hamilton facing lefties. So this is kind of a bit of a mess in a way.
If you have, and I'm just typing something out right now just for myself so I can visualize it. So you need two catchers, obviously, Narvaez and Wong. Right now, the way our first base platoon is set up, it necessitates having two first basemen in Romy and Toro. Then you have your three starting infielders in Meyer, Story, and Bregman. And then the problem starts to come in the outfield. So obviously you have Duran, you have Rafaela, you have Anthony, you have Abreu. Then because of Duran and Abreu's struggles versus lefties, we've been carrying Ref Snyder, and presumably he will become the DH to split time with Yoshida. So right there, that is our 13 guys. The problem is that Ref Snyder and Yoshida, and for that matter, Anthony, Abreu, and to our knowledge, Duran, they are exclusively outfielders. You have Rafaela, who could move into the infield, but why would you want to when he's the best center fielder and really best defender in the game? It's just too crowded, and it leads us back to the idea that Duran, Abreu, and Yoshida are corner outfielders who hit versus righties. And preferably you have a guy to platoon for them versus lefties. It just doesn't make sense to have all three of them on the roster.
It doesn't. And, you know, I keep trying to make the case in my head for this season to use Rafaela sparingly in the infield. But even if he's backing up Meyer, it doesn't make sense because that would put Abreu in, but that would be against the lefty. So you're not, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're going to have some interesting decisions to make there. And I mean, I guess Romy could play second in a pinch. I guess that's what's going to have to happen. I just think Hamilton and Eaton are probably out. I'm not sure in which order, but.
Yeah, we're going to see Romy more at second base like we saw today. What I hate about that is then Toro and Romy are both splits heavy guys. So that's going to force Toro into a lineup versus lefties, which he is not good at. That's going to force Romy into lineups versus righties, which is not preferable. So there's just a weakness here. And funnily enough, it comes down to what Breslow and Cora have been trying to preach, which is versatility. We have too many corner outfield guys. That's just what it is.
All right, let's get into that. I got a trade candidate that I like, as you know, but I just want to just underline the roster, not specific to just Massa and Bregman coming back, but you keep looking. We need an impact bat somehow, but you know, when you look at the outfield, it's hard because you're so crowded, you know, Abreu, Duran, Rafaela, Anthony, Ref Snyder, you know, we just spoke, Ref Snyder can play DH at this point, but you're just extremely crowded there. And then long-term, you've got the password to factor in as well. I don't think they're going to play Massa out there, but you know, goofier things have happened. So that's what's going on there. And then when you look at the infield, Meyer, Story, and Bregman are going to get the bulk of the playing time. I keep trying to trade Story. I don't think it's going to happen, but who had another epic game today. We didn't even mention him, but I keep talking about his stock, and if it gets higher and higher, I think it does get to a point where a team's like, 2 years isn't that big of a risk, but anyway, but just getting back to it, just assume he stays. Your first base situation is really the only place where you can definitely add someone. You know, you can part with Toro. It's been a nice story, but you know, and Romy can still play first at times. He can play second others. You can even DH him if the matchups justify it, you know, versus a certain pitcher. But I'm just wondering how you get that bat in there. And on top of that, I mean, Christian Campbell is a first baseman, and I don't know if they intend to bring him up at any point this year. You know, perhaps he just kind of, they let him cook down there and just really sort it out. He did have two multi-hit games. He hasn't hit any home runs. That was just in the last three or four games, but he's not lost at the plate down there in Worcester. Like, he does seem to be starting to figure it out some, but it's just a mess. There's just no obvious place to put someone. And I was looking at the market and I'm like, well, who can we get where it makes a little bit of sense? Here's my guy. Fernando Tatis Jr. Okay. Now, instantly, everybody in the audience, you're thinking, why would the Padres do that? He's the face of their franchise. They have him under control for so long. That makes no sense whatsoever. It'll make a little bit more sense than you think. Okay. And here's why. The Padres are in bad financial shape right now. Not last season, but the season before, they had to take out a $50 million loan to cover their payroll, to pay their players. Now, I've never worked a job in my life where my check bounced from the owner, but we've all heard of it happening, okay? So to think that, you know, an MLB team is in that bad a shape that the money wasn't there to cover it. Now, they had a $289 million payroll that year, which is high. It's significantly above the luxury tax, but you would think a baseball franchise could handle that. And looking at Petco Park, butts are in the seats. They've been a fun team for a while, and they still couldn't cover it. Additionally, I just learned this today. I wasn't aware of previously. They actually wanted to take out a $100 million loan, but MLB stepped in and said, absolutely not. That looks reckless. MLB assessed their situation and said, take out 50. We'll approve that and, you know, pay your players and whatever other bills that need to be paid. So there's that going on. Fast forward to late last fall. They were having a very good year last year, by the way. Their owner dies, and I don't know if it was expected. He had been ill for a while, but it seemed like it was unexpected. And then, so that happened in, I think, September, October. And then over the winter, there became this bitter fight between the owner's brother. So Peter Seidler was the owner. John Seidler was basically the right-hand man. And so his surviving brother, and he's got multiple ones, but John Sadler then got into a very public feud with the widow of his brother.
It's like a soap opera.
Now, exactly. And if I'm not, I don't claim to be an expert on the family drama here, but it was my understanding, and I'm not 100% on this. The wife is technically the owner, but the surviving brother, John Sadler, is the control person. So there's a big mess there. And then the last two winters, they never made a significant signing at all. Made trades. I forget the Dylan Cease timing, but he's just an arbitration guy. That's not a major financial strain. So when you look at all that, I think there would be some motivation there to move that big contract that Tatis had. And I think he's probably in the fourth or fifth year of it. It was initially a 360 something million dollar contract, a little bit more than what Devers got, but not by a ton. It's kind of backloaded. So the first few years of that were cheaper money, but I can see a fit for Tatis. You know, all season long, we're sitting here saying Duran or Abreu, they're the odd person out. At some point, one of them does become the odd person out. The Padres covet Jaron Duran. There were some trade rumors in the month of May, and I don't know how serious it got, but there was a little bit of buzz there about the Padres really wanting Jaron Duran. So here's my trade package. Put either Duran or Abreu in it. Let's assume it's Duran for now, because that's what the reports were. I'd rather it be Abreu. I've been on record, but if it has to be Duran, it has to be Duran. I'd put him in the deal. Then I would put one of Richard Fitz or Tanner Houck in the deal. Give them another arm. And I don't know which one would be sexier, but Nick Pivetta's having a hell of a season with them. And it wouldn't surprise me if they were looking at Tanner Houck go and saying, well, you know, we fixed Pivetta. I mean, what's it really going to take to fix another Red Sox pitcher? I mean, Andrew Bailey's their pitching coach, for crying out loud. So let's, you know, so they can get a controllable arm with one of those two. And then I'd put James Tibbs the third in it. One of the guys we got from the, you know, the Devers trade. So I'd give them that trade package. They're going to get a stud outfielder, a serviceable pitcher. And I don't know if Tibbs is a stud prospect, but a relatively higher end prospect.
Hit his first home run in the Red Sox organization today, I saw.
Just today. Yeah, I saw that too. And I would at least start with that package, and the Red Sox will take all of the Tatis money. And then he's an impact bat. He slots in probably him and Bregman are both righties. So I don't know if those are your two and three hole guys, but you know, they'll be hitting near each other in the lineup, let's say. I think Tatis would be conservatively a 35 to 40 home run guy at Fenway Park. It's a much more home run friendlier park than Petco. And I know Petco has made some adjustments, you know, with their field. So it's more home run friendlier than it used to be, but still not, you know, not as high on that list as Fenway would be. So you get him in there, and then you've got Anthony probably playing every day. Anthony, I think, I can't remember if he drove in a run on it or if he advanced a runner, but he had a key hit today against a lefty. It was just a soft single, but, you know.
And then he followed that up with a really nice piece of base running too. And I forget who it was, but someone hit a double.
That's right.
He scored on it very well.
From first, actually. Yeah came all the way home from first. Yeah, so there you would have Tatis and Anthony in your outfield every day, presumably Rafaela as well. But all three of those guys, well, I don't have Tatis's numbers up. I think I did look a few days ago, and you know, they're all serviceable against left-handed pitching. So you don't have a hole out there. You don't have a platoon that definitely needs to happen. And next year you got the password coming up. So I don't know how you fit that into it, but I just think it's a good move. I don't know if the Padres would do it, but I could see where they would be motivated to move that money. They're getting a guy they covet. They're getting a nice prospect with, you know, high upside that can help them out for the foreseeable future. And they're going to lose Dylan Cease this winter. So Fitz or Houck would fit that need. And I just think it's at least a good starting price. And Tatis's numbers are very good, but I mean, he's not like off the charts. You know, he's not Ronald Acuna or, you know, some of the other elite outfielders. He's not Mookie Betts, but you know, he hits probably what, 265 to 270 with a high on base and decent, you know, pop. And he's not a stud outfielder by any means either. So I just think it's a doable trade. If Craig Breslow wants a massive W, I think that could be it. And I think it would really change public perception and maybe increase the confidence here of a late run. And I will point out two things though, because other people inevitably will. A little bit of baggage with Tatis. He does have a PED suspension previously, and he's a little bit of a knucklehead off the field. Not in the last couple years, but he did have that. I think it was a dirt bike accident.
Something like that. Yeah.
Hurt his hand or his arm or something. But so hopefully the maturity is, you know, is bigger than it was previously. But that's the one impact move that I think is attainable. And you're trading mostly from your surplus.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting idea. I think the only thing that really hurts on that is just that the Padres right now are in their own playoff race. You know, it's a tight wild card over there. They're probably not going to win the division. So that means they're racing against the Giants. The Cardinals right now actually have 48 wins, the Brewers, the Mets. It's interesting, you know, would they be willing to part from Tatis? Probably more so in the offseason than midseason right now, I would feel. But you're right about diagnosing the money problems. They have Bogarts and Machado both locked up until 2033, Tatis until 34. And unfortunately for them, Bogarts and Machado are only getting older. Tatis is 26 right now. Both Bogarts and Machado are 32. They're locked up until age 40 or 41. Lots of money. But what's interesting about, you know, you mentioning them being willing to or wanting to get Tatis's money off the books is, what did we hear when Devers was traded? We heard mention of algorithms that these teams have that really look at long-term financial commitments as big albatrosses around players' necks. And if that's the case, if the Padres do look at Tatis and say, oh, well, God, he's owed so much money, I do agree that he's a guy who I wouldn't necessarily be surprised would be moved. I think that the Devers trade, being even possible, opened me up a lot more to the idea of big names like that being moved. One guy who I would love to see, also from the Padres, if it's not Tatis, is a guy like Michael King. He's 30 years old, going to be 31 next year. He has a mutual option in his last year, $15 million. Probably he's going to opt out, try to get a Max Fried-style contract. He's a guy that I would love to pursue in free agency. If we could convince the Padres to separate from him, it might even be cheaper. The only problem, again, comes in the fact that, oh, well, right now they have Musgrove, who is missing the whole year, owed $20 million this year. He's getting surgery. I think Yu Darvish is also on the books right now and has also missed this year, if I recall correctly. So I don't see them moving King unless their season takes a nosedive this month and they sort of view themselves as being out of it. That's the only problem I have with that possibility, I'd say.
I would only take King if the extension was worked out prior to coming, like, or otherwise it's a deal breaker. But, and again, I'm not overly pessimistic with our rotation either, but just to weigh in on Tatis real quick, just for more clarity, he's got 9 years of control left, but that final year is only his age 35 season.
Yep. So that's a nice contract.
It's a Devers-esque contract where it doesn't take you close to age 40, you know, like the Padres do with Bogarts. And that's a contract they're just never going to get out of. It's just the Bogarts deal might go down as one of the worst of all time, but
without question.
Let's pull up Machado real quick. So he is 33 years old. Wow. Today. Wow. Look at that.
Oh, happy birthday, right on, Manny.
Right on the money. And so he's through his age 40 season. So that's one less year of Tatis. You know, there's a scenario where I wouldn't mind Machado if money was eaten.
Like, it would need to be a lot of money.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. One way to do it, sort of, might be to give them Trevor Story. You could use that as a partial way to do it, but. Yeah, what is owed on Machado? There's no way.
It's a lot. Let me see.
Let's just call it 30.
He signed 11 years, $350 million. Good God. Yeah, next year, $25.09 million. And then from 27 to 33, it is $39 million a year.
240, 280, $305 million.
That's a lot of money for an older man.
Yeah, and he's still okay. I mean, he's still, and I think he's still got a few good years left, but if they ate like maybe, I don't know, $100 million of it, that would be a third. I'd at least have a conversation. Let's see. Yeah, he's hitting 292 right now with 14 dingers.
I would just be so afraid of having a guy like that on the books, age 37, 38, 39, 40. I mean, that's going to be an ugly end to that contract, I have to imagine.
You don't think he could play first or DH and still be serviceable?
I'd be afraid that the bat would fall off.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing it with Machado right now. Not Machado, excuse me, Arenado.
Yeah,
and definitely. So I don't know what the metrics look like here. Clearly,
I just pulled up his page, by the way. My eyes just about popped out of my head. I mean, he's unbelievable. And what's really interesting is he's actually one of the best defenders in the league at the moment.
Is he?
I did not realize that.
Well, you had to figure he would be better in the outfield than he would as a shortstop. He was not good at all as a shortstop. He was like early Bogarts in his career bad. Bogarts got better. Wow. I'm not trying to talk you into Machado right now, but pull up his Baseball Savant page.
Yeah, let me see here. He's very good. It's true. He is very, very good.
So, and he's only 1 year under Arenado. So, like I said, I don't love it, but if you could really fleece the Padres from the financial aspect of it, I think it would be interesting. And he has been a punk for most of his career. Ironically, and I've spoken about this on the podcast, but there was a situation maybe 3 years ago where Tatis wasn't giving max effort on a play and Machado confronted him in the dugout, you know, as if to say, dude, get it together, clean it up, get it together. And that was kind of a turning point, you know, for me with Machado. And he and Harper were both free agents at the same time, and I think they both signed pretty late that winter.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just so interesting because we're talking about, you know, getting an impact bat and whatnot, and I would love a guy like O'Hearn or Naylor or someone like that even, but the problem right now is just like when Romy and Toro keep hitting like this, it makes it really hard to tell them to take a walk, you know, because you look at the Savant pages and, you know, they're hitting the ball well. Toro chases like crazy, whiffs, but it's just tough. I mean, right now, if I were to upgrade this team, I think I would just like another front end starter. That's where my mind is at. I'm not sure really who's available. And if we're trading a guy like Duran or Abreu, it would have to be a guy who is locked up for another 3 years minimum after this for me. And I mean, it's a short list, maybe even a non-existent list. That's the only problem with it.
Yeah, I don't know who that would be. We'll see. I mean, we've got a tough stretch for, you know, the two and a half weeks after the All-Star game.
Most definitely.
So I think there will be an increased urgency to get that bat. And I'm setting the bar high with Tatis, and I don't think it'll happen. But
I could see it being an off-season move. I'll say that much.
Yeah, well, so the Padres aren't going to – Duran's obviously, or even Abreu, isn't going to quite equalize what they're giving up there. So perhaps they would still have to make one more move to get another bat in there. But – you know, so like I said, it's not quite a lateral move, but I don't know. I think the Padres would love Jaron Duran. I think that fan base would like him. And I don't know what the dynamics within the fan base are with the organizational stuff financially. So that's just my move. If Craig Breslow wants to save his own ass and change the narrative, you know, for Red Sox baseball, that a move similar to that would get that done. And for now, I think I will agree with you though, that a move probably doesn't happen. You know, I don't think any splash move will happen. And I keep seeing people say that the Red Sox are going to have the same exact deadline they had in the last few years. They're going to sell a little bit, but they'll also buy. Jonathan Papelbon threw that out there.
That's my fear.
In a tweet. Yeah. And Papelbon's connected. You know, he hears everything, you know, that's going on. He's, you know, all the whispers behind the scenes. And I'm sure the Nesson crew doesn't have, you know, I don't think they have exclusive knowledge necessarily, but yeah, we'll see. So what do we have tomorrow?
Yeah, so we are going home now. Boys should be on a flight tonight back to Boston for our hosting of the Colorado Rockies. Looks like we have a trio of night games here. 7:10 p.m. starts for all three on the 7th, 8th, and 9th. We have Austin Gomber, a lefty. Looks like, yeah, Gomber and Freeland are both lefties. Senzatella's a righty. So we have Austin Gomber versus Richard Fitz, Kyle Freeland versus Brian Bello, and Antonio Senzatella versus Lucas Giolito. And let me tell you right now, I would like to soften this statement with, obviously, if you make it to Major League Baseball, you're a great athlete. I'm not taking that away from you. These three guys are bad. I mean, these there is no excuse for Fitz, Bello, and Giolito. This Rockies team is very likely one of the worst teams ever assembled. I mean, it has to be. We thought the White Sox last year were bad. We thought the White Sox this year were bad. The Rockies are awful. We have to sweep this. They're a major league team. You can't sleep on them, but you have to sweep it.
I was looking at each starter earlier. And Gomber tomorrow is by far the worst of them all. Yeah. And perhaps that's a blessing because Fitz obviously is going to be our worst starter going into the series. But Gomber has only had 2 strikeouts in his last 14 2/3 innings.
Yeah, looks like only 4 starts for him. Actually, just pulling up the Savant pages here, I have to say Senzatella probably jumps out to me. He has 46 strikeouts in 86.1 innings. Which you can't imagine that style plays particularly well in Coors Field, especially we are in Fenway for this, but I mean, this should be batting practice in theory. If the bats get shown up by any one of these guys, I mean, they just deserve to get, you know, some cold water splashed on their face.
Yeah, I can't really make the case for a loss here, I guess. Like I said, you know, are you pumping your chest that, you know, Fitz is going to tear it up? I mean, he should, right?
He should. This should be a good bounce back game in theory for him.
But, and it's a big one because Tanner Houck is going to have one more rehab start and potentially be back. So, you know, if you're Richard Fitz and you're trying to make a case to stay in the rotation, you need to have a big start here. So that's one of the interesting things. Bueller will have one more turn before Houck comes up. So maybe, I don't know, maybe something happens with Bueller there, maybe a phantom IL type thing to see if they can address some stuff. But yeah, I mean, looking at it, there's Bayo is just pitching very well. Lucas Giolito as well. He wasn't pitching well at home, but he has been lately. Like, there's just, he's bucked all of the trends Giolito has that were ailing him, and he's just shoving every time now. So I expect that to continue in the finale here. And, but we'll see. I mean, if things go sideways, you know how the fan base is going to react. Tampa also, I was looking at, has only won three of their last 10. They were shooting up and I think had even tied the Yankees for the division lead.
Yep, that's right. The Yankees have been having a terrible skid of their own.
Yeah, Clark Schmidt's going to have Tommy John. I think they're getting Luis Gil back. So theoretically, they probably need one more starter at the deadline. But yeah, I think it should be more batting practice, and this offense should just kind of continue to roll through the next three games.
Definitely. I'm just looking at the numbers for the Rockies. Looks like they shaped up a little bit in June. They were 1-3 in March, 4-22 in April, 4-24 in May. They had a 10-6 June. So red hot, no doubt. 1-4 so far this month. Maybe they figured something out. Maybe they're not as awful as they were at the start, but I mean, this starting rotation looks abysmal. The offense, they have a couple fun players on their team. I just feel so bad for the players and the fans of that franchise right now, because it's a pretty miserable product.
Yeah, they had a nice, well, I shouldn't say a nice window, but they were looking like 2017 through 2021, they could be competitive because they had Arenado, Story. I was always a big Charlie Blackmon fan.
Oh, yeah.
I remember trying to trade for him in 2017. He was the guy I wanted, and I was like, put Bradley in the trade or something. And but obviously it didn't go down that way. I think we got Nunez from the Giants that year, but yeah. So I just, you know, so whatever window they had, they did make one postseason. They got into the NLDS. Yep. They beat the Cubs, I think, in the one game wild card, if I'm not mistaken. And
maybe trying to remember.
Yeah, it was 2018.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm just trying to see where the Rockies are in their last 10. Let's see, 3-7. So yeah, not doing well.
I mean, the offense, like I said, they have a couple fun players, but I mean, just top to bottom, it's not a good team. Defensively, offensively, pitching, this is as close to batting practice as you can get in the MLB. Despite that, I remember watching them beat the Yankees. They took a game off the Yankees, and anything can happen. So, I mean, you need to show up. But at the end of the day, I mean, this should be a good sweep. We can get to, what would it be, 49, right, wins and 45 losses. That would be pretty nice to head into a four-game series versus the Rays, even if you do split that. You know, we're poised to at least walk into the All-Star break instead of limping in. So, fingers crossed.
Yeah, I think we'll be on tomorrow night talking about a 14-2 score.
Honestly. You guys have your work cut out for you. Thank you guys so much for joining us. I've been Nick, joined by Terry today. great series to watch. Tomorrow will be Mark, Chris, and Terry doing the post game. And until then, we'll see you guys next time. Take care, everybody. Let's go Sox.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.